again, Nightmare Society. Big thanks to our producers for this week's episode. Danielle, Ginger, Mike to the D, Cat OJ, Devin, Savannah, Pixel Donut, Janelle, Michelle, Diane, Joy, Josh, Shorty, Lauren, Rebecca, Araceli, Kaylani Hawaii, Obese J, Katie P, Rory, and Kaylee. If you're interested in joining the official Nightmare Society campfire online, you can find us on patreon.com/nightmare society. Also, a big thanks to user Lubis Lane, who is sharing our second story of the night. Our first story is anonymous. Now, get comfy and prepare yourself for another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
I was 7, and my younger sister was 5, and we disembarked the school bus hand in hand, excited about our first week of school, ready to tell Mom all about it. We rounded the corner for home and saw that there was no car in the driveway. Little sister was happily chatting about her teacher, her new friends, and the playground. But I felt unsettled. Why was Mom gone? Mom was always waiting for us at home, usually with chopped fruit or veggies. She was ahead of the curve on that. No junk food rules embarrassed me as a kid, but I'm so grateful for that now. Well, maybe just the car was gone. Silly thought, but not everyone's a genius when they're 7 years old. As we reached the intersection of the porch and the driveway, I knew the car was gone because Mom was gone, because the front door was shut. We were not latchkey kids, although that was quite normal in our neighborhood, but I did have a house key just in case. I'd wondered what our parents had meant, but this must be the case. I released my little sister's hand and knelt to fish the key out of the bottom pouch of my backpack. I was a little nervous, but proud that I'd remembered, and when I rose to unlock the door, I froze. Looking down on us from inside the house was a figure dressed head to toe in black. To my mind now, this camouflage was so complete that there wasn't anything revealed around the eyes to indicate this person's face or race. I had stopped with the key in my hand, and although I had no intention of getting in now, the figure shook its head back and forth. I dropped the key and urged my little sister off the porch. I was at a loss of what to do. So I led her to the side yard where we had a tire swing and a rope swing, and told her we would wait for Mom. This had not been part of a just-in-case conversation. When I folded myself into the tire swing, I realized I'd wet my pants. Little sister asked me what was wrong, and lying was never my strong point, so I told her someone was in the house. She looked puzzled and said,
"It's just Daddy's friend."
I asked her how she knew, and she answered that she just did. I told her we would wait for Mom anyway. I don't know how long we waited. I was frightened, hungry, and uncomfortable in my wet pants. Whoever was in the house left from the back door, because after some time my dog darted around the house and happily greeted us. The fence was being redone in the back, and everyone who lived in our house knew to put him on a chain rather than let him run freely and escape through the gaps. Upon Sonny's arrival, little sister was ready to go in, and I was not. We argued in the way kids do, exchanging witty insults such as dum-dum and stupid-head, but I was able to win the battle due to the merit of my age. Mom finally pulled into the driveway, and Sunny and I beelined for her. I had given in to the tears I'd been repressing, and the only thing that shocked me out of my hysterics was Mom urging me to come into the house. I managed to tell her about the man in black, and little sister chimed in with,
"Daddy's friend."
And then Mom ushered us into the car, even Sunny, and drove a few blocks to her friend's house. The police were called. We were questioned together and separately, and we were left with Mom's friend while she and the officers walked through the house. There had been a break-in focused on the basement, Dad's territory, and my parents' bedroom. If anything was gone, Mom didn't know what it was, and Dad feigned innocence in relation to his friend. Nothing like this ever happened again, and when I asked Mom if she remembered it, she told me the past is better left there. I haven't been that scared since. So, Dad's friend, that's not me. During my early 20s, I worked as a meter reader in Iowa City, Iowa. A meter reader is the person who records how much electricity, gas, or water you've used each month. If your meters are on the inside and you want an accurate bill, a meter reader must enter your home whether you're there to let them in or not. Just to clarify, we only entered homes if consent was given when the customer first signed up for the service. Customers also provided us with keys if necessary. Entering a home when the owner is not present is something that I never got used to. No matter how loudly I knocked, I never shook the uneasy feeling that I wasn't welcome. The inside of a home is the ultimate private space. A home's exterior is just the image of ourselves that we project to the rest of the world. But the further you venture inside, the closer you come to truly seeing what kind of person lives there. And if you want the raw, unfiltered truth, head for the basement. I hate basements. I've seen walls that looked like giant, static-filled TV screens until I realized it was roaches scurrying across the white background. Cobwebs so thick and dusty that it looked like the cotton candy machine exploded at the Spider County Fair. I've seen rats, snakes, feces, weapons, neglected children, abused pets, homeless squatters, massive hordes, bizarre sexual items, a makeshift meth lab, and even a coffin. There are rational explanations for all of these things. Well, maybe not all of them, but there was one basement where what I found was beyond the grasp of logic, and that's what made it so terrifying. It was an old apartment house. From the outside, it looked like every other house on the block. I entered the back door and found myself at the top of a staircase. I ran my hand along the wall until it grazed a light switch. I flipped the switch, but no lights turned on. I wasn't carrying a flashlight. A typical route involved 5 or 6 hours of walking, so I carried as little as possible. Oftentimes, I used the light from my handheld screen, but it only illuminated whatever was about a foot in front of it. So, armed with the world's worst lantern, I made my way down into the darkness. Once at the bottom, I blindly shuffled across the room, one baby step at a time. With arms outstretched and head down, I eventually reached the far side of the basement. I shined the dim light from my handheld along the wall and discovered two doors. Each door led into its own small room. I chose the door on the right and found the meters in the very far corner. As I entered the reeds, I began hearing noises coming from the other room. Something was moving, and there was whimpering that grew louder the longer I listened. I eventually realized it was a dog, It sounded weak and distressed. I tried to open the door, but it was locked. At this point, the dog was scratching the other side of the door. I felt helpless. I reported it when I got back to the office, but I couldn't shake the thought of that dog. It stuck with me over the next month, until it was time to return. So there I was, 1 month later, back within that basement. At least this time I knew where the meters were located. I shuffled back to the little room on the right, while keeping my ears open for any sounds coming from the other room. This time, I heard nothing. I read the meters and started making my way back, but I couldn't shake the memory of that dog. Was it still trapped in that room? My curiosity got the best of me. I stood outside the door for a few moments, listening. Still nothing. That's when I made a huge mistake. I tried to open the door. I had no more than jiggled the doorknob when I first heard it. Screams. Blood-curdling screams. Unlike anything I'd ever heard. Sounds that I didn't think a human was capable of producing. Short, piercing, high-pitched shrieks followed abruptly by a low, drawn-out, guttural moan that ultimately morphed into something that I can only describe as crying, but much louder. It was all over the place, like some sort of psychotic freeform jazz. I stumbled backwards, nearly losing my balance. I shouted something like,
"Hello?"
There was no response.
"Who's in there?"
Just screaming.
"Are you okay? Do you need help?"
Still no response. Just screams. There was no doubt that I yelled loud enough for him to hear me. He didn't want my help. He wanted me gone. I fumbled my way through the darkened room toward the exit. When I reached the top of the stairs, I just stood there listening. I was trying to wrap my mind around what I was hearing. I waited for the screaming to stop, but it never did. When I finally left, it was still as loud and demented as when it began. I felt relieved, but that quickly vanished when I realized I had to do it all over again next month. I reported what I'd heard, but nothing came of it. As my return drew nearer, a sense of dread grew inside me. What kind of lunatic sits alone in total darkness and silence? My mind created endless explanations for what kind of hell laid beyond that door. By the time I returned, I'd built him up in my mind so much that anyone other than the devil himself would have been a letdown. But there was no sign of him the next month, or even the next several months. I'd nearly given up on solving the mystery, when a stroke of luck pulled me back in. One night, I went to a concert with my friend Laura. After the show, I gave her a ride home. She'd moved somewhat recently, so she had to give me directions. I didn't pay much attention to where she was leading me, until she pointed to a house a ways up the street. I couldn't believe it. She had moved into the house with the mysterious room in the basement.
"This sounds weird, but have you ever noticed anything odd about the basement at this?"
I began to ask, but before I could finish my sentence, she blurted out,
"A crazy guy lives down there."
Finally, I had confirmation. She went on to tell me that even though her apartment was in the attic, she often heard him yelling late at night. But that wasn't all. She had actually met him. One day, while walking to her car, she saw him standing in the lawn. He stood perfectly still, with no expression on his face. He was directly in her path, so she cautiously made her way around him. She noticed he was staring at her, so she offered a friendly hello as she passed. He had no reaction, except for one unsettling exception. He stuck out his tongue, then quickly sucked it back into his mouth and resumed acting like a statue. Thoroughly creeped out, she got in her car and drove away. 2 or 3 months later, I finally met him myself. I entered the back door like I had so many months before. This time something was different. There was a light on in the basement. I peered down the staircase. At the bottom, a ragged-looking dog was staring back at me. It was the same dog I'd heard during my first visit. Then I noticed something else. Behind the dog, I could see a pair of bare feet. The ceiling blocked my view of the rest of whoever was standing there, but it didn't matter. I knew it was him. I should have left right then, but I didn't. I know this probably doesn't make sense, but at this point, my desire to finally get some answers outweighed my fear. I shakily called out,
"Meter reader?"
and started to make my descent. As I made my way down, more of him was revealed. He looked to be middle-aged. His head was shaved and his eyes were wild. He was wearing pants, but no shirt. What I remember most was how lean and sinewy his body looked. It had the look of a body that was never at rest. I explained who I was and what I was doing there. To my surprise, not only did he talk to me, but he actually sounded somewhat normal. The volume and pitch of his voice was odd, but he said the same sort of things that people typically said to meter readers. I even started to doubt whether or not he was the same man I'd heard screaming, but his behavior slowly removed all doubt. As I read the meters, he rapidly paced back and forth. He was constantly wringing his hands together and spastically cocking his head from side to side. The longer he talked, the more agitated he became. He began grimacing, and little verbal tics started popping up in his speech. Every so often, he'd blurt out aloud in the middle of a sentence. He was trying to suppress these sounds, but he was losing the battle. I started to make my way to the exit. He followed. His verbal outbursts grew louder and more frequent. I was petrified. When I reached the stairs, I drew our conversation to an end and said goodbye. As I turned to head up the staircase, he could no longer hold it in. Screams. The very same unforgettable screams that I'd heard coming from the locked room. I ran up the stairs as fast as my legs would carry me, flung open the door, and rushed back into the daylight. A month or two later, I had a couple of friends, including Laura, over to my place. I was excited to tell her about my encounter. But as I was relaying what happened, I could tell that something else was on her mind. When I finished telling my story, she told me about something she'd seen a couple of weeks earlier. One day, she noticed lights flashing outside her window. She looked outside just in time to see police officers placing the man from the basement into the back seat of a squad car. She later found out from another tenant that he had attacked someone with a knife. That was the very last we ever saw of him. I don't know what became of the man in the basement. I like to think that he got the help he needed. But maybe that's just because I'd rather not think about the alternative. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Nightmare Society Radio. And there's links in the description to the Nightmare Society merch store, as well as our online campfire on patreon.com/nightmaresociety. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.